Welcome back to another episode of the Front Page Football Podcast. We are back again. We are now weekly because the A-League men's season and the A-League season is just around the corner. As I said last week, we're back on a weekly basis. We're going to be running basically weekly until the end of the A-League season, I'd imagine. And I'm really looking forward to it. And so joining me for this podcast, we're going to be actually talking not about anything A-League related. We're mainly going to be focusing on the Socceroos. And Matt Olson, all the way from Western Australia, joins me on the pod. Matt, how are we on this late Tuesday evening where I am? Although you're in dinosaur time as usual, so it's only about 20 past six where you are.
Yeah, clocks have changed. It is that time of the year, so like I'm a little bit sick. So if you hear some sniffing and whatever else, just don't mind me. But yeah, look, obviously very excited for. I think this narrative that's about to play out with Tony Popovich and the Socceroos, and obviously for the start of the A-League season. So looking forward to it.
Yeah, and we're going to get right into the meat of some Socceroos preview and some chat about squad selection. We're going to talk a little bit. We've got a little bit of a fun segment planned around the two games as well. Me and Matt are going to go through, and we'll talk a little bit about Australia's upcoming opponents in the October window. But as usual on the pod, we'll start by just recapping some news headlines over the last week or so since our last podcast and what has happened in the world of Australian football. So let's start with some dub signings, A-League women transfers. There were a few which took place. The Mariners, they completed the signing of the American defender, Brian Riley. Wellington have added Japanese winger Mabe Tanaka to their squad. She had a very good season in the MPLW in Victoria with the Preston Lions. Adelaide United, they've made another signing. Young English midfielder Abby Clark joins Adrian Stenter's side. And the biggest one of all, which happened today, if I'm not mistaken, the day of recording, was, of course, Casey Dumont is back in the dub. And she has signed for Perth Glory, a major signing for Perth Glory. And I already know what Matt is going to talk about here and give his little spiel on. Matt, Casey Dumont, massive signing.
Yeah, look, quality. I think the first thought here is that you're obviously getting, you know, an immense amount of experience to be able to add into a team that really lacks experience, to say the least. So very happy with the signing. Also, a lot of footy heads out there pointing out that Hawthorn just played Freo at Fremantle Oval on the weekend. Casey Dumont with Hawthorn, of course. So it's only natural that the weekend they're in Perth, she obviously came over to sign the contract as well. So that's a little bit of a funny one. And they're playing the Eagles over in Melbourne. So a lot of Eagles fans who are based in Melbourne also happen to be, you know, Glory fans. They're going to be getting an autograph and some photos with her and stuff. So that's pretty cool. But just a funny little quirk to add to, just the kind of aura around the signing, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And it seems, you know, only those few signings which took place over the last week or so. So I think most squads are now probably being finalized. Most clubs are probably happy with the business that they've done now. We could see, of course, a few signings from now until the season start. Of course, remembering that the A-League women's season doesn't start until the first week of November. So just keep that in mind. Could still see some moves being made. Let's move on to Aussies Abroad. Because there were quite a few good stories to share from the weekend's action. So in terms of goal scorers, we'll focus on the men's side first. So Apostolos Stamatolopoulos, congratulations, scored his first goal for Motherwell in a win against Hibernian. It was an absolutely cracking strike as well. I'm not sure if you saw it, Matt. But Anthony Kalic in Croatia, who's been doing well for a few years now, but he also got his first goal of the season over there for Hajduk Split, who are actually top of the Croatian league as well. So good to see there. And Jamie McLaren, remember him? He scored his first goal in India for the Australian-influenced Mohan Bagan in the Indian Super League. So he scored his first goal there. Well done to Jamie. A couple of other milestones. Congratulations to Harry Suter, who's coming into camp for the Socceroos in some very good form. He's played his part every single minute in six straight clean sheets for Sheffield United in the championship, which is fantastic. Although I think, as we'll get into, it's not really Harry Suter's maybe defending that the Socceroos need so much, for, particularly for the game against China. But nonetheless, very, very good to see him coming in with some good form. Also, I thought I'd mention a really big win in Europe that Kai Rolls and Cameron Devlin had with Hearts in the UEFA Conference League. They beat Dynamo Minsk away from home. If anyone has been following these two and Hearts closely this year, they've actually had a really bad start to the Scottish season. So I believe that actually might have been their first win of the season in all comps. So really good to see both of those guys play a big role there. On the women's side, a couple of goal scorers from the WSL on the weekend. So Mary Fowler scored and assisted for Man City in a 2-0 win over West Ham. And Claire Hunt got her first goal for Tottenham since joining, of course, in the summer. But unfortunately, they did lose to Liverpool. And, you know, we're not going to mention it because it was such a shameful result. Ange Postecoglou's Tottenham obviously completely collapsed, giving away a 2-0 lead against Brighton. So, yeah, 2-3-2 defeats for Spurs men and women that week on the weekend. So yeah, as a Chelsea fan, I'm delighted with that. But as a Ange Postecoglou fan, not really happy with that result. But Matt, what catches your eye, I guess, from those stories?
Yeah, probably a bit of the action out of Scotland, I think. Obviously, with Rolls and Devlin playing UEFA football, that's very special. Stamatolopoulos scoring for Motherwell. And, of course, didn't mention it, but Josh Nisbet was in the Ross County 11.
Yes.
I know that they had the lead against Celtic. I don't know.
So this is actually uncanny. We were just talking about goal scorers there, but obviously there's a host of other things which happen every weekend with those abroad. Josh Nisbet did start. He played 76 minutes against Celtic. Ross County were 1-0 up. They lost 2-1 against Celtic. Celtic equalized literally straight after Josh Nisbet came off. So make of that what you will, I guess. I'm not that massive a follower of Ross County to devise whether Josh Nisbet coming off directly led to Celtic getting back in the game. But I do have some other, I guess, thoughts on Josh Nisbet later. Of course, he, you know, wasn't included in the Socceroos squad, but we'll get to that after the break. But yeah, so Matt, the Scottish boys catching your eye. Did you see Stamatolopoulos' goal?
Well, I can't say that I did, actually.
Okay.
I heard a lot about it, yeah.
Yeah, no, it was actually a free kick routine, and they've just rolled it one side of the wall when he's on a tight angle and he's just smashed it over the net. Very, very quality. Perfect. Quality finish. Hopefully the first of many for Apostolos Stamatolopoulos. No, I'm not going to sing it like Jared Walsh or Pablo Sanchez, and neither are you, Matt. But there's, you know, I was talking with, of course, FPF's SA great man himself, Antonis Pagonis, and we were making a joke that if, because Jared Walsh, I'd imagine, will be emceeing the game on Thursday night, if Apostolos Stamatolopoulos scores, should Jared Walsh sing, you know, Apostolos Stamatolopoulos, like
Apostolos Stamatolopoulos, Apostolos Stamatolopoulos, Apostolos Stamatolopoulos?
It's even the Pablo Sanchez part of that is even funnier because he gets so into it. It's like he's like really like it's just really like Apostolos Stamatolopoulos. It's like Jesus Christ, all right. But yeah, anyway, let's we've got a little bit of time, so I'm kind of mucking around a little bit, but let's move along to some results, and mainly just focusing in Asia. We saw Sydney FC. I watched this game. Sydney FC came from behind after an early howler from Andrew Redmayne. They came from behind, beat Kaya FC in the Philippines 4-1. So they are now 2-2. in the Asian Champions League too, which is good to see. Patrick Kamala, a couple of goals. Nathan Amanitidis, a first senior goal too. So some excellent little stories there for Sydney FC. I'm sure Ufuk Tale is delighted to see his foreign players in particular hitting their straps well before the A-League season. And also, in the women's side of things, Melbourne City have started off with 3 points in their Asian Champions League women's campaign, beating the Iranian side BAM Khartoum 2-1 in the opener. So Rihanna Polisina, Mariana Speckmeyer scoring the goals. Also, you know, I'm sure any SA listeners would love me to mention this, but Michael Matriciani, congrats on his first win as a professional head coach as well. And yeah, last one I wanted to mention here. I mean, I wasn't going to mention all the kind of preseason results that have taken place over the weekend, for example. I'm sure some people would have seen there was a little bit of a festival that happened in Mildura. Adelaide United played Brisbane Roar. Adelaide United women played Western United women as well. There's a few interesting results there. But one which caught my eye was Queensland's women's state team actually beat Brisbane Roar in a preseason friendly 3-2. They were actually 3-0 up in that game as well. Now, again, I don't know the details of what lineup the Raw put out and all that sort of stuff. So nothing to kind of, I'm not going to comment too much on it, but yeah, just an interesting result, I guess, to mention. Matt, any takeaways, I guess, from the Asian side of things on those two results?
Yeah. The result with Kaya was one that, was pretty intriguing, given the mistake from Redmayne early. You know, Kaya actually took the lead, which was remarkable, but it's this ability to, like, go to the Philippines. It's a country where an Australian team will go and win 10 out of 10 times, you know what I mean? So there was a lot of reliability with that. But just good to see that stability in the ACL too, because it will be a much tougher competition than what the AFC Cup was for the Mariners last season. So, yeah, they'll be aware of the challenge that comes ahead with San Fred Chay Hiroshima in match day 3.
Yeah, and I mean, we were chatting about this, like how San Fratche are actually top of J1 at the moment, and they're in the Asian Champions League too. So that's a big challenge for Sydney FC. And also, also interestingly though, like they definitely, I saw their CEO, whose name is escaping me right now, but he came out with a bit of an open letter to the Sydney FC fans, and he kind of talks about in the letter, like, basically, we're going for it in the Asian Champions League too. There's, you know, it's definitely a competition, I think, that Ufuk Tale probably thinks his team can win, like the Mariners. So it's going to be interesting to see how they go as that progresses. So some other news before we go to a quick little break. First of all, we're going to start with, unfortunately, some sad news. And that was former Socceroos assistant coach Johan Neeskens, who worked alongside Gus Hiddink and Graham Arnold during, of course, the memorable 2006 World Cup campaign in Germany. He actually passed away, and I speak for Matt, I'm sure, as well, just extending our condolences to Johan and his family. Rest in peace. And yeah, forever going to be remembered in Australian football history for his role in that World Cup campaign. Definitely not a campaign that is going to be lost on many Australian football fans anytime soon. Also, on the Matildas side of things, Claire Polkinghorne announced her retirement from international football. The most capped Australian player of all time, 18 years with the Matildas, and she's planning to make her final appearance against Brazil in her home state of Queensland in November. We're talking about Claire Polkinghorne's career in the group chat that we've got the other day, and I kind of sent through a list of career achievements, and when I saw it, I was like, holy crap, like, man, Claire Polkinghorne has really had quite a special decorated career, and I'm sure Football Australia are planning something big for her for that game in Brisbane to really send her off on a high after what has been a fantastic Matildas career. Elsewhere in terms of Matildas, so the PFA gave out their award winners for the Young Footballers of the Year. Mary Fowler won the Young Women's Footballer of the Year, and Alex Paulson took out the Men's Award as well. So congratulations to both of them. And some other news related to Aussies and the international break coming up, or A-League men linked players, I guess. First one, Trent Bahaja, who is a player we have critiqued and criticized on this pod before, but in all seriousness, congratulations to Trent, because he got called up to the multinational team for their October window. And Australian manager Josh Smith, I thought I'd give him a shout out here on the pod. He begins his stint with the Solomon Islands on Thursday night. We're recording this on a Tuesday night, by the way, for the listeners, so it could be tonight or tomorrow night by the time this podcast comes out. They start their World Cup qualifying campaign against Fiji, and that'll be his first game in charge of the national team. So good luck to Josh. And some final news just on the NPL New South Wales front, staying on the coaching side. Wollongong Wolves announced the appointment of Warren Grieve as their new head coach for the next two seasons. Of course, he replaces David Carney, who of course stepped down earlier this month, or a few weeks ago now. So yeah, that's some other news. Matt, anything there which caught your eye?
I think the three obvious picks for me would probably start with Josh Smith, someone that you know well within the South Australian sphere of influence. Really, really good to see. And I think it was inevitable that he would end up coaching in the IFC, given his resume. So, yeah, good luck to him. But it will be, knowing how incredible that IFC Nations Cup was, it'll be a very, very intriguing time ahead for Josh Smith. Obviously, Pogs, I'm not really sure what else you can say. You know, just an incredible career and you know, something I kind of touched on kind of going into this was that Claire Pockinghorn really represents that transition from, you know, the dub games on the ABC in the late 2000s when, you know, the Matildas were playing in front of 900 people in grounds where, you know, there was all government and AIS related advertisements, you know, on the hoardings there, and that complete transition into hosting the World Cup and becoming basically the perennial queens of Australian sport. So Claire Pockinghorn, absolutely tip your hat off. And just a quick one for Trent Bahaja. I actually know who it was that got the Maltese FA in contact to be able to, I guess, recruit Trent. And knowing that guy's track record with this kind of thing, Trent will be looked after very, very well. So I wish him the best in that regard, because he is literally going to go from, you know, being the scapegoat of the A-League essentially to quite literally playing UEFA football against some of the absolute very best. So honestly, fair play to him. And yeah, just good luck to Trent.
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, you know, we have been critical of Trent Bahaja's game, but, you know, good luck to him. And hopefully he can actually be an influence for that Malta team. All right, Matt, we're going to take a little break. Maybe you can go get some water to help out that throat. It's definitely not the best at the moment. So yeah, bear with us, of course, if you are listening. We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, it's all focus on the Socceroos. Okay, so Matt and I are now going to get into the main reason why we are recording the podcast tonight, which is because we are going to get into a bit of a deep dive preview for the Socceroos and their two games against China and Japan. I did talk briefly about Tony Popovich's appointment as Socceroos head coach last week with Jake, if you want to go and listen to a little bit of that on the previous podcast. But me and Matt are going to focus our attention a little bit to his first squad that he selected. And then we've got a little segment planned as well. So Matt, let's talk first of all about that first squad. So some very interesting inclusions, and the main ones that come to mind are Jason Guerrier getting a recall, Nishan Valupale getting a maiden call up, and Daniel Arzani also, Daniel Arzani getting a recall as well. So a Melbourne Victory trio there. So that was the main sort of subplot from this squad, it seemed, was, hey, you know, Hopper's picking his boys that he coached at Melbourne Victory sort of thing. I mean, what's your thoughts on that? When you saw like Nishan Volupele in the squad, for example, were you sort of like, you know, what's going on there? Or were you like, hey, you know, what's wrong with giving the young guy a chance? How did you react to that?
Well, the feeling is overwhelmingly neutral. I just don't really mind one way or the other. I think that most of the concern is purely about the sort of the tactical setup and what goes on the field kind of thing. You know, with the likes of Jason Guerrier, it's one of those ones where like he's played for glory, he's played for victory, he kind of followed Popper around, and I think it is just a natural progression of someone that Popper thinks he can rely on. And it's hardly the first time that we've seen this kind of experimental nature with a player that a coach has gotten to know well, where they kind of then by an extension become part of that Socceroos mold. I mean, listen, it's happened with you know, Ryan Grant, for example, under Arnie as a reliable name. So I don't look at this and think it's a disaster or anything, but you can't really look at it and be like overwhelmingly happy about any of the circumstances that are surrounding it. I just think it is what it is, right? So I think being neutral is the best outlook to have. The one thing I will say is, especially regarding, you know, Popper and what we expect from him, I don't really see where like the big change is going to happen in the lineup, and I think there's a point where we can be skeptical about that. But maybe it's just simply trusting the process. You know, maybe there's enough of a different cog that can move along to the point where we see, you know, a really successful window, especially because of, you know, the ability of that China game to be so crucial and that it should be a routine win, but then to back it up with, you know, the toughest of all fixtures in Japan away. We just want to see the intent. And to that extent, you know, we've got to keep the faith and trust the process.
Well, I think, so let's just briefly on like those three players. So I think Jason Guerrier, like, again, I kind of agree with you, Matt. I think also I'd extend this to like someone like Luke Bratton and even Volupele too. Like people, you know, I've seen people like, maybe it's because Popper made such a big deal about, you know, no one's entitled to the shirt. You have to work for the shirt. And maybe people sort of just looked as, oh, how can you say that? And then you basically just gave it to some guys that you liked when you were victory coach. That's how people have perceived it, is what I'm saying. I'm not saying that's how it's played out. But I think, first of all, I think Jason Guerrier has probably earned a call up. He's been very good for a couple of seasons now at A-League level. I think Nishan Volupele, you can make a case that he's done, actually, and Matt, you know this, like Nishan Volupele has done very well at age group level in the national team setup. So there's kind of that a little bit too. Maybe the program kind of sees him as a future Socceroo and just thinks maybe we can get ahead of this early, and he's been in really good Australia Cup form. And actually, that leads to my next point. It's really clear here that Popper has prioritized only the A-League players who went deep in the Australia Cup. So there's also that, because it's basically guys who have been playing weekly in the last 3-4 weeks, and that's who he's gone with. And that's why Luke Bratton, for example, has been brought in late as a replacement for someone like Masluongo, right? But then in saying that, like, you know, we might not see Volupele at all. We might not see Bratton at all, for example. And I just think, like, I think we've had this conversation before, but people get like just their knickers in a knot over players who might not actually play at all. Like they're just there literally as maybe emergencies. So for me, I think it needs to be more about what team's going to start and what options are kind of available on the bench. And really that kind of leads me into the next part, where like Jordan Boss, Riley McGree and Adjin Hrustic are all back in the squad. Now Boss and McGree are two massive ins. And I think Adjin Hrustic, I think given the circumstances of the lack of creativity that we've seen from the Socceroos in those first two games, like I would argue that Adjin Hrustic coming back in is a big in. I know some people will say that, hey, you know, has he been playing that well at club level? Has he been playing enough at club level? But at the end of the day, outside of, like, I don't think he's going to start. And I think outside of that, whoever's coming off the bench needs to be able to, it's about the profile of player that they are and what they can actually bring to the table. And I think what Adjin Hrustic brings off the bench, as an example, if you're nil all against China in the 50th minute, well, he brings creativity and that's what you need. So I've got no issue with that. I think, but actually, like, there's also, and I don't want to, I'm not going to talk about this too much, but like, it kind of, you look at it and think, man, like Popper, you know, he got kind of a nice luck of the draw here that these three creative players are all back available now in the squad for his first camp. They weren't available, well, two of them anyway, in Boss and McGree for Arnie's last camp, for example. And that was, you know, like not having Jordan Boss and Riley McGree, probably two of our top five most important, maybe attacking slash creative outlets. Maybe you could argue Boss, but I think Boss brings an X factor, which for a game like China at home is really important. So, like, it's big, you know. So I think when you look at that, Matt, and I think one thing's for sure with this squad selection is that the Socceroos have more creativity, and Tony Popovich has more creative weapons to utilize in his first two games. That was kind of my takeaway there.
Another thing just to keep in mind to that extent is also that for what is or isn't being done, Popper actually had a really small turnover here, like an unnaturally small turnover going straight into a window upon being appointed. And to that extent, if he is able to change it up and if he is able to manifest a result, that would actually be remarkable given the turnaround. I mean, if we win that first game against Japan since 2009, That would be quite the achievement, given the fact he's quite literally just been appointed and then had to get in touch with these boys and kind of get everyone around to act like it's the first time we've been together, kind of thing, yeah. You know. So, there's a lot there that I think it is definitely worth just, you know, fence sitting on this and then you know, caring about it afterwards. I don't even want to say like being hostile or getting the pitchforks out. I mean, if we lose to China, yes, that will happen.
Mm.
But there's just a lot of consideration that needs to go on. Is kind of what I'm saying. And to that extent, you know, I'm sympathetic of whatever happens. But obviously, you know that for someone that was just appointed, you can't really make too many excuses. It is immediately up against the pump. So it is what it is.
Yeah, and I mean, like the other thing too, I just got the feeling because I watched Popper's press conference, the squad announcement in Adelaide on on Friday, and like just getting the sense from him answering the questions, like I don't actually know how much time he's really had to actually assess the player pool. Like that's the other thing which people need to realize. I think, you know. So, like, for example, okay, Max Ballard. Yeah, like, fair enough. I think probably was a tough snub from the squad. Again, is he going to be a player who, like, are we getting our knickers in the knot over, like, hey, why is Bratton over instead of Ballard when, like, whoever's in that position might not play at all in the two games? So, again, isn't that big of a deal? But if we are to make a big deal about it, like, maybe Pop has just gone, listen, I know Luke Bratton. I've just coached against him last few years. He's playing regularly. And he's been in the setup before, albeit he hasn't played, but he has been in the setup before. Max Ballard hasn't in any setup. And maybe it's just kind of a case of also a travel thing. Like he could basically just get a 2-hour flight from Sydney and meet us up in Adelaide. He'd be one of the first players into camp. Like, you know, all these things I think factor in, but they factor in a lot more prominently when, Matt, as you're saying, you've just been thrust into a role with about 2.5 weeks preparation for the first game, what is like the most important game of this year for the Socceroos, for sure. So
the Asian Cup was this year. You can't say that.
Sorry. Yes, that's a very, very good point. I cannot say that. The most important game of this qualifying cycle, although the cycle was only like two games long, so it doesn't really... Well, actually, no. I guess the cycle extends to round two as well.
Stop overthinking it.
It's just a massive game. I just think it's just too early to like judge sort of squad selections and, you know... like get the pitchforks out about you know, why isn't so-and-so being played? And also you just have to ask yourself, like, okay, if so-and-so was picked, how much is he actually gonna play? So that's my thing too. In terms of like starting lineup, that's where things are really gonna be interesting. Do you have like someone in particular you want to see, maybe that we didn't see as much under Arnie, for example, that you'd want to see start against China? I know I'm putting you on the spot a little bit, but
I mean, there are probably a few players I can think of that I want to see in the fold more, especially people that can maybe work well under Popper. But in terms of starting, listen, Adrian Hrustić is someone that has always dealt with his club situation being a little shit. And he has thrived in the green and gold in the way that a lot of players seemingly have. Let's not really forget that the likes of Harry Soutar became a cult figure for the Socceroos early on, but his domestic career always had been up in the air as well. And I think it's actually a little bit of where some of the pride in the jersey comes from, to be honest, is that we can really make a name and make a career for ourselves repping the green and gold. With Adrian Hrustić in particular, though, the reason I bring him up is that if you cast our minds back to the last game away at Saitama, he scored. You know, and I think he's a really experienced head that's going to know what it's like to play there. And I think he's someone that's going to come in crucial when you just need someone who knows what it's all about. And regardless of how we perform against China, going into that Japan game is probably going to be the more influential result, right? Because again, if we take points off them, it's massive.
Yeah.
And that's where I would really actually like to see a Adrian Hrustić step up in the way that he can. Scored one of the penalties against Peru. You know, he's a head that just gets it. And to that extent, I'd really like to see him reserved for the second game in particular. But beyond that, again, I am pretty neutral. I just want to see progress, and I want to see Popper get things sort of flowing. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like, when we talk about, like, what team we want to see and stuff, like, I'm not expecting anything too big. Like, for example, I was saying in the last window, like, I don't think someone like a Harry Suter, someone like a Jackson Irvine should play against an opponent, like, the challenge that China represents. I just don't think it's the type of game for those players, whereas I think a Japan away is obviously absolutely you need those guys. So, I don't know, but I just don't see... Like, is Popper going to come in, like, game one, bang, like, Suter and Irvine are on the bench? Like, probably not. Like, so, you know, like, that's for example. And I keep talking about those two players, but there's others too. Like, it's going to be interesting. Like, the striking situation is another one. Like, could we see, I don't know, Apostolos Stamatopoulos, like, actually just suddenly get a nod and he's up front in his home city on Thursday night starting? Like, that would be a massive sort of, whoa, okay, like, big show of faith from Popper. Like, I'm interested to see if we see anything like that. How's Nestor Iheanacho used is always going to be a question of these Socceroos camps now too. So, yeah, it's very interesting. And, like, you know, again, Matt, it's a good point about Hrustić. That could be part of the reason for, like I just mentioned before, you know, I think on the bench, you just want to have guys who can influence a game in different ways. And I think Hrustić is one guy who can do that. If Jordan Boss doesn't start, there's another guy who offers something different off the bench. So, yeah, I think there's just some different weapons that can be used. Another point I want to mention, Josh Nisbet, hard snub, potentially. I think I'm not too sure why he actually isn't part of this because, and even when the like Luongo and Metcalf dropped out and then Bratton and Yazbek came in and it was kind of like, okay, like maybe not Nisbet instead of like Yazbek, for example. Like Nisbet has not just been playing, but in the Indonesia game, just quickly, Nisbet was great off the bench and I thought he actually created a bit of a creative spark. He added a creative spark that the Socceroos needed. What's your thoughts?
Just think about this for a second, okay? I want you to think really, really hard about this. Think about the technicality of East Asian players in particular. When you think about a Chinese player, when you think about a Japanese player, think about the way that they excel, the kind of tactics that they play. They tend to be shorter and they tend to be very technical on the ball, very good on the ball.
Yeah.
That is quite literally Josh Nisbet. So I think part of the reasoning, part of the thought process, especially against China and Japan, the way that they excel and the way that they play, we're going to need some different bodies. It's kind of practically playing a certain style.
Yeah.
Thinking out loud here because I can imagine Joshua Nisbet's style of football being a huge liability against those countries.
I understand that against Japan because I think against Japan, Australia are going to be sitting back and soaking up a lot of pressure. I just don't think Josh Nisbet is the type of player who would suit that style, but like I fully expect Australia to have 70% of the ball on Thursday night, right? Like I don't think, I mean, unless like you've seen China, so I haven't really seen much of them, to be fair, but like I'm not expecting China to come out and like try and dominate the ball. Like they've already started pretty poorly, I think.
But
you know,
with the counter-attacking style that they play, they are relying on that kind of figure, someone who is really good on their feet, you know, people who are less physically strong. It is like the bread and butter of Chinese football, to be honest with you. But in saying that, my mind goes back to the Asian Cup. And yeah, Group A in the Asian Cup, they couldn't even really take the initiative against Tajikistan. So your point is pretty solid there, but I can actually see Nisbet struggling to fit in against these two teams in particular. I don't know what it is, but I can kind of understand that. I can understand where there's a bit of a system issue.
All right. Interesting.
But look, it I'm not saying that if I were in Popper's shoes that I'd straight away put next to him. I'm just saying that you'd actually find it hard to utilize him against this very specific type of opponent.
Yeah, I mean, again, I don't, you know, I was just talking before about like not making a big fuss about a guy who might not play, but I actually think like in the right situation, Josh Nisbet could be very beneficial for the Socceroos in certain games. But yeah, I understand that reasoning too. Okay, let's pivot to our segment that we've got planned here. So the segment, what is it? So what we're going to be doing is I've called it, we will definitely see ... And what we're gonna do is me and Matt are gonna go back and forth. Matt's gonna start since he's just an excellent guest and co-host tonight. So he's gonna start and he's gonna give me something we will definitely see from the Socceroos across these two games. And it can be anything. It could be something to do with performance. It could be something to do with a certain player. It could be something Tony Popovich does. And we're gonna get into our crystal balls here. So, Matt.
Start us off,
please.
I really wanted to come out swinging with one, but now that I'm going first, I might just save it because we're gonna have a bit of a back and forward.
Yeah, we're gonna do like two or three each. So yeah,
that's all good. I think we will definitely see a different a different mindset towards playing China by comparison to Bahrain, which obviously just comes from Papa wanting to take the initiative and everything that people in the landscape are talking about sort of coming to fruition. So what I'm getting at there, I don't really think I need to explain myself much further again, because I wasn't really necessarily prepared to come out with this. But it's obvious to me that something will have to change. Some kind of X factor will be introduced. And let's say, for example, with that more attacking mindset, someone like Nesta comes on and has a really big impact against China in front of the home crowd. Can very easily see that happening. So for the purposes of certainly this point, I think, we'll definitely see, an attacking initiative from the Socceroos that maybe had been certainly lacking under Arnie.
Look, I talked about this with Jake on the last pod. I'm intrigued by this idea that Popper keeps talking about. He keeps mentioning this word dynamic, and we were both kind of like, okay, like what does that look like? And you know, it's an easy thing to say in a press conference, but how is that going to be, illustrated on the pitch by the team? And I'm just curious. I don't know if you want to expand, like in terms of the mentality. Do you mean in terms of like Australia are going to be more direct? Because that's something that I'm wondering. Like, is it going to be a bit more of a, hey, like let's actually start Craig Goodwin, for example, and I don't know who's on the right. We could start, I don't know, let's say it's like Aaron Kunda, like just let's start two natural wingers and let's get the ball out wide early, let's get cross into the box, like be more direct. Is that something you
of how Arnie kind of took the initiative against Indonesia, but to a far more successful kind of effect. I mean, I don't like using the word direct necessarily, but I guess it doesn't really, like, it's not the wrong way to describe it. I just think that we have to see that change, and that intent is the word that you're really looking for, the intent to be able to go forward. So
All right, I'll get my first one then. So I'm going to keep it really simple. It's really kind of boring, but I think, no, seriously, like, I think I just need to say it because people just need to kind of calm down, because I've been talking to some people and everyone's just kind of, you know, like a little bit kind of panicked and like, oh my God, like, are we sure we're going to beat China? Listen, Australia are going to beat China. So we will definitely see a Socceroos victory in these two games. That's, I am willing to stamp my flag on that. We will definitely see Australia win a game in this window. That's, I'm more than willing. So in other words, I'm saying that they're going to beat China. So I just think, you know, as we'll get to into a little bit later on, we'll talk briefly about China. They've got a few outs. They look honking, to be honest with you. To just cut the chase. And like, although people have rebuffed me and just been like, hey, like, come on, like, are we really in a position to talk about the quality of other teams? Like, you know, in saying that, we had plenty of chance to get Indonesia to win it. And, you know, everyone also, like, let's not forget going to Indonesia, even I think we were talking about it, me and you, like, we were kind of a little bit worried, like, well, you know, Indonesia, like, even worried in the sense of, like, can Australia, like, actually dominate the ball in Indonesia? Like, I'm not sure. And, that, you know, we did. Like, Australia had over 70% of the ball in Indonesia. I don't think they had any defensive issues at all in that game and could have easily scored. So as much as people are a little bit worried, at the end of the day, if we get an early goal from like a Suter set piece, something like that, like Australia could win this game 3 or 4 nil. Like, it's very possible, for example, right? So I'm all wanted to say that because I think people need to calm down a little bit. Like, we're two games in the qualifying cycle. It's a very winnable game on Thursday. And then, you know, after that, you win a game, you're going to Japan, which I'm not saying we're going to win, but you're going to Japan, you've got a new coach, there's a new life in the team maybe, and things start to look a little bit more promising. But anyway, just Australia going to win a game. They're going to beat China. And this is people are going to, if we lose, like, people are obviously going to clip this and I'm going to get absolutely trolled online, but who cares?
No, it's fine. I know where you're coming from.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'm going to come out swinging in an even bigger way, right? Okay. I understand that there's method to the madness that there is. We will definitely see Australia qualify for the FIFA World Cup in 2026. Now, hear me out.
Sorry. I thought we were going to talk about mine, but you're definitely going to, you're going to move to your next one.
Yeah.
Okay, so fuck mine then. Yep.
Well, no, you said what you needed to say. I did. What can I do to elaborate?
Yeah, no, you can't.
I didn't score a goal at the Asian Cup. I didn't think it needed more elaboration.
No, it didn't. It's a good point. It didn't really need elaboration. You're right.
But hear me out when I say this again. Would you like to restart? Would you like
to restart? Hang on. Let's make sure the listeners are keeping track with each of our things here. I'm going to preview what you're about to say. We spoke about, I was speaking with Jake last week and I kind of said this to him, but yes, Matt, your second, we will definitely see.
I think we will definitely see the Socceroos qualify for the FIFA World Cup in 2026, okay? That just sounds ridiculous at this moment in time.
Also, this was meant to be we will definitely see from the two games, but you just gone...
Listen. Because beating China guarantees being in the top four. Need I remind people that this is a group, you know, with a team as weak as China in it, and we only have to finish in the top four, and then we're going to be playing teams of China's quality, even if we miss the top two, okay? But the reason I specifically say this now, the reason I stress this now is because people are freaking the fuck out without realizing how unbelievably easy the format is.
So I just quickly, I said this to Jake, a doomsday scenario, Australia would finish fifth. Doomsday. Like, oh my God, like, what's happened? Australia, like, let's say, I don't know, like, let's say they beat China, but then they lose to Japan, and then, like, they lose twice to Saudi. I don't know, something ridiculous like that, where it's just, like, a total disaster, and it's just a really, really bad qualifying campaign. Again, it would be to finish fifth. You'd have to be the second worst team in that group to actually just be out of it altogether. And like I was saying to Jack last week, if Socceroos finish third or fourth, you go into another group with the third and fourth from the other groups, Australia are going to be like easily the top two team in that group. You would think.
Also, it's worth mentioning that like Indonesia will be a different prospect when they're over here. China are already, again, pretty weak. And I think you've chalked down the 3 points. It should be expected to chalk down the 3 points. The question of Japan and Saudi is, yeah, okay, that could really be a terrible scenario where we only pick up like 1 or 2 points from the total four fixtures. But there will be enough in the tank to get past China, Bahrain, and Indonesia, even after the first two games that we've seen, to the point where we really won't have to be like, really have facing that doomsday scenario. But I also, like, I think the thing is, like, this is not even an excuse to be complacent as much as it is a flag to wave to just tell people to just shut the fuck up and, like, calm down kind of thing. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Because we live in this world of hysteria and criticism, and do you know something that really kind of struck me when you were talking there? You basically were talking about, like, we'll be interested to see what Popper does, and it'll be very intriguing to see the 11 that he's putting out against China, and then kind of evaluating how he sees the whole cycle. And in the back of my head, I'm thinking, no matter what he does, like, if he tries to rest the likes of Sutar and Irvine, like you're saying, people are going to criticize him. Why is there no experience on the pitch? Even though you can see the reasons why, you know, that would be beneficial for a younger, again, potentially more kind of direct and attacking style, like what we've been explaining, where you get Aaron Kunda with his pace on the wing straight away, and you really just go at them in those first kind of 10 to 15 minutes of the game, right? Like, when you put the premise together, it's pretty obvious that, like, there's somewhere where we can see the method to the madness.
Yeah.
But whatever decision is made, people are going to be critical of it. People are just going to be pissed off. And, like, this is the world that we live in, you know what I mean? So, like, honestly, like, we will definitely see Australia make the top four, okay? And I don't think people have really, like, people struggle to see these things until they happen.
Yeah.
But people do not understand how incredibly weak the fourth round will be should we even be there.
Yeah.
So it's just worth keeping in mind. I don't think we're, like, going out of our way to defend the Socceroos and defend the FA and kind of, you know, get down at the altar kind of thing, as much as we are just being realistic about it as well.
Yeah.
And so that really kind of stuck.
Well, I mean, like, you mentioned Indonesia, for example. Like, one thing that the Indonesia draw told me is, yeah, I think we'll beat Indonesia at home, for example, right? Like, okay, they've got to travel the other way now. Like, can they come here and actually, like, get a result when really they were hanging by a thread at their home in front of like 80,000 people? Like, I don't see that, right? So that's an example too.
I think the Bahrain game is going to be exposed as a really massive outlier as well, because we've already run in Riffa. We won in Riffa prior to the Asian Cup, so we have no issues going there again and picking up points.
Yeah. And then, you know, like, if China, like, we're talking hypotheticals now. So if you hate hypotheticals, then by all means, feel free to skip along. But, like, if China are as bad as we both think they kind of are, and, like, Australia are able to pass this test on Thursday with pretty flying colours, then I think we'll feel that China away should also be 3 points. So, in other words, what we're saying is, even if you think Japan could be two losses, Saudi might be a win, a loss, or I don't know, like, not ideal. I mean, if we're talking direct qualification, the massive game is at home in November against Saudi. That's the big game, probably. And obviously Japan at home will be big too. But again, we are talking down the line. Let's get it back to this. I'll go with my next one then. This is kind of a funny one. And Matt might find this somewhat funny from Popper's Perth Glory, although he actually used a slightly different system with Perth. But this is funny if you followed Melbourne Victory last few seasons, if you followed the Wanderers. I'm going to do this. We will definitely see the Socceroos play a 4-2-3-1. Yeah, because that's the old reliable with Popper. I think we're going to see some sort of, like, it's like Irvine and I don't know who would sit next to him necessarily. Let me make sure I get the full squad in front of me again, just because sometimes you do forget names. I think it's going to be like a midfield pivot of Irvine and Backus. I think maybe at the 10, maybe it's either McGree or Hrustic. Probably McGree if I had to make some sort of prediction. Probably Goodwin on the left, Duke up front. And then on the right is an interesting one where it could be either one of like Irinkunda, Arzani. I'd be surprised if Arzani was just kind of straight in and starting role. Probably Silvera, actually. Probably starts on the right. Goodwin on the left, Duke up front. McGree is a 10. I mean, Popper could even be even more Popper about it and not play like a natural 10 and just play like Aiden O'Neill, Irvine, and Keanu Backus all together and just have three basically sixes slash eights. But that's my, we will definitely see a 4-2-3-1 used by Tony Popovich because he absolutely loves a 4-2-3-1 formation.
And the system's not even that unfamiliar to the Socceroos. I can think of the 4-2-3-1 that they played with Irvine, Moy, and Rogic all in that side of, you know, that midfield pairing where you'd have the two sixes and the 10, right? I mean, it would actually be on par. But my worry and my counter to this, I guess, would be, is that too stagnant? Is it too much of the same from the issues we kind of want to get away from with Arnie? But again, I don't actually know if Popper has that gene in him. Like, I'd be very, very surprised to see him kind of going with some sort of all-out kind of...
I mentioned
at the back end of the World Cup, right? Like,
I mentioned, like, because when obviously Popper was Perth Glory coach, like, he used the back three or a five, if you want to. Like, you know, he has used that before. So could we see wingbacks? I don't know. Like, that's possible, maybe. For me, someone like Jordan Boss would be like an unbelievable left wing back. I think he would suit that role perfectly.
Sorry if I'm touching on some two niche areas here, but who would be the equivalent to Mertula in the 2019 Perth team for Socceroos? I'd be struggling to think of who kind of plays.
That's the thing too. Like, do you actually have three centre backs you could trust to start? I mean, I guess Burgess could play as a left centre back. You could play, obviously, Suter would be in the middle of the three. Yeah. And then it's probably, but then you got Kai Rolls too. So you've actually, it's a weird one because if I'm not mistaken, Cameron Burgess is a left footer as well. So you'd have two left footers and a back three would be a little bit strange. It's just a weird thing to have. He is a left footer. Just confirm that.
Yeah, okay.
It would be weird in a back three to have two left-footed centre-backs. So maybe it really doesn't work with the Socceroos squad, unless you want to play Thomas Deng, but like that would be like the biggest shock to the system ever if Thomas Deng just suddenly started in a Socceroos qualifier. So that the only other option, is like if you just played some sort of back three, but I'd be surprised by that.
Mm.
Yeah. any more thoughts on that?
I've said what I can on formations. Again, but I just to kind of echo the sentiment, I guess, you know, we could see a bit too of an anti-football defensive style from Popper, and it would just, I'm not sure that it would make the problem worse, but yeah. Anyway,
you're next. You're next. We'll do one more each. We'll do one more each.
Yeah, no, that's so good. I wanted to go slightly humorous.
I kind of went slightly humorous there. So yeah.
Okay. If the drought is
it's gonna be a we will definitely see ..
Yeah, but I'm giving more context. Okay. If the drought is finally broken in Saitama, gonna bring out the accent for this one. We will definitely see drunk Aussies in the town square in Saitama.
So you're obviously joking because I don't think you, I know you, and you definitely don't believe the Socceroos are going to win in Saitama. So that match just basically took the piss out of the segment. So thanks, Matt. Awesome.
Yeah, well, I did and I didn't, right? Because let's talk about this, right? Mm. Let's talk about what it would take to grab 6 points, right? In terms it's pretty well understood that against China, we need to be on the front foot, and against Japan, we need to be on the back foot, right? That contrast.
Against China, we need to play nice football. Against Japan, we need to be absolute shithouses.
Yes, great. But again, just with the turnaround and everything else, if Popper pulls this off, I'm putting this on the record. If Popper pulls this off, I will actually single-handedly appreciate this more than the Premier's plate in 2019, okay? And you know how much that Premier's plate means to me, because yep. this team hasn't played in the fucking finals for 5 years, half a fucking decade, okay?
So, Perth, I am Matt's just letting his Perth Glory fandom
telling you right now, that will be like GOAT status for Popovich if he pulls off 6 points here. And there will be drunk Aussies in Saitama, all right? I don't really have the financial means to go and join them, but I would.
Also, hey, work. I'm taking a few days off because I'm going to get pissed in Saitama. Yeah, not sure how that combo is going to go. But good luck to you. Yeah. you were saying?
No, I mean, this is it. I just think it would be a really, really monumental achievement. And I think that for a lot of people who want to attack the kind of antics that might go on pregame against China, just understand that no matter what we see, it probably will look a little bit weird. It probably will rub people the wrong way, but it's only going to come down to Hopper really has to make a method for the entire window. It's just that crucial. It is that crucial. Mm-hmm. And he is up really, really up against the odds. And I just think that what a monumental achievement it would be if the streak is broken off the back of, holy fuck, we need points against China. Because he needs to think about Japan before we even know that we've got those points. Well, that is huge.
Yeah, and that was the other thing too. Like going back to that press conference on Friday, again, gauging from the answers, like only in the last sort of week, they've really been delving into the opposition and the analysis of that. Like, I don't know how much analysis has been done, for example, on Japan yet. It seems it's probably just, and rightly so, I think, is kind of just, listen, Japan, I don't want to say, like, obviously you need to study Japan, like they're an unbelievable team. But I think the Socceroos have a pretty key indicator, whoever's going to be in charge, like at this stage, it's going to be a very defensive approach, and it's going to be, a more counter-attacking approach. Whereas China, it entails a few more specific things like final third things, movements, rotations. You know, you need to be a little bit more switched on to break down a defense. It requires a bit more maybe tactical detail for that. That's the other thing too about this. Like, and you know, we've kind of mainly focused here on the China game because I think we're both sort of thinking like that's the more important game in the context of things. And also, it's just hard to judge that Japan game because, as we'll talk about soon, like Japan are fucking unbelievable. Like, there's that. And also, like, it's difficult to talk about Japan game when we haven't seen this Popovich team yet, like, right? We haven't actually got any evidence of like how they're going to play and stuff. So, and also, quick thing on the Japan game or result or outcome, if the Socceroos lose, now, obviously, this is bar whatever Tony Popovich does during the game in terms of substitutions and setup. Of course, we have to see how that goes. But more than likely, if Australia loses Japan, it's because of systemic issues with development and Japan, you know, just being light years ahead, and not because of a coach making a certain mistake on one game, right? Like, you know, I think at this point we can just say that, listen, Japan are in a different time zone to Australia when it comes to football development. So I don't think we should pin any losses to Japan right now on, you know, solely on a coach, for example.
Also think it's worth pointing out the window of opportunity that Saudi present in their current guys. Like, losing to Japan is one thing, but this Saudi team internally are kind of a bit of a mess. So losing to Japan and looking ahead towards, okay, we're playing Saudi Arabia in the next window, it brings an element of calmness to it. But again, I'm going on the defense, and I know a lot of people really don't appreciate that at the moment. So I'll be careful with how I word that. But I'm, to be honest, I'm not even wording that from an Australian perspective as much as I am wording it from the guy who actively walked away from the team during a shootout in the Asian Cup is still the coach. So that's really from a Saudi perspective more than anything else. But how far ahead am I jumping there? Let's play these two games. And
we'll save that for the November preview podcast recording in like a month. So all right, I'll do like one more. And you know, I might as well bring a South Australian flavor into this. We will definitely see a South Australian goal contribution of some sort. So, whether that's a Craig Goodwin assist, whether that's an Apostolos Stamatolopoulos goal, or a Nestorian Kundagol maybe, or a, I don't know, fucking Thomas Deng up like a salmon, a spawning salmon. I can't believe I just did the Andy Harper reference anyway. Matt's dead. Matt's dying. It came into my head as I was like thinking of Thomas Deng scoring for the Socceroos, and I was just like, I think I have to do the spawning salmon thing. But okay, who are our candidates here? Deng, Goodwin, Stamatolopoulos, Iren Kunda, holy shit, my SA knowledge. Remind me. We've got McGree, of course. Paul Izzo's not scoring, obviously. And Joe Gauchy's not scoring either. So
can you imagine? But like exactly like Mark Bosnich against Tonga in 2001.
What is happening on this podcast? I think so. All right, so we will definitely see like a McGree assist or a Goodwin goal or a Iren Kunda assist or goal. Yeah, that's kind of what I'm saying. We're definitely going to see a South Australian goal contribution of some point, of some sort. So yeah, up sticking up for my SA brothers there. All right, Matt, that's going to conclude the segment. We are going to take a short break and gather ourselves after the spawning salmon joke. And when we come back, we're going to do some brief discussion about China and Japan, and opposition watch, I guess, and then give our full predictions for the two games. Okay, so we're going to finish off this podcast a little bit shorter. It seems the podcast is going to be than some of our recent episodes, which is always good. So China and Japan, the two opponents that Australia are facing, Matt is going to give just some insights into both. So first of all, with China, they are missing a couple of key players. So Wu Lei and Alan are both out for China. Wu Lei, of course, has scored the second most goals in Chinese national team history. It's important to note. A player who's also played in Spain too. It's probably like the crown jewel in a development all or pool of players over Chinese national team history that have not been great. So definitely a big loss for them. And they have not started the qualifying campaign well at all. And we were kind of talking before about how we feel this should be a shoe-in 3 points for the Socceroos, Matt. China, you mentioned briefly about their Asian Cup as well as a bit of background, but what can we, I guess, expect to see, and what realistic threat do China really pose to Australia on Thursday, I guess?
You know, it's funny because all of this talk about post-Army, you know, what are we going to do? When you watch China, and if you know anything about this team, they basically are a Graham Arnold 11 that's really kind of structured and really struggles to get goals on the board, but like tenfold worse. That is the caliber of opposition that we're talking about here. Mm. And what proves this, obviously they didn't score a goal at the Asian Cup, and they were like insipid against some pretty contextually average teams. Tajikistan actually went beast mode during the Asian Cup, so I don't want to be too harsh on them, but like, yeah, if you know the group, you kind of know what was going on there. What I'll say is China got through by the skin of their teeth at the expense of course, India. The famous ice hockey-esque goal where the ball was clearly out of bounds for Qatar against India that knocked them out on that same night. Kuwait struggling to score. Sorry, it was Thailand were involved in the group as well. Now that I'm thinking about it, I'm thinking about two different groups. Sorry. But there was all of that chaos on the final night. And China were in the group with Thailand and Singapore. Sorry, my apologies. Thailand were in the group with the two Southeast Asian sides. And really, it should have been Thailand that had got through. But for the whole goal scored situation where Singapore scored a goal, I'm pretty sure this story went mega famous at the time. So I don't know if you recall, Christian, But basically, a Singaporean dude scored for the team to basically knock out Thailand on the goals scored premise, and then it went down to yellow cards because the goals scored were tied with China. And a bunch of China fans who live in the US recognized that the Singaporean player who scored owns a restaurant on like a street in New York or something. And random Chinese, like obviously of American origin, Chinese soccer fans raided this restaurant and started giving up 5-star reviews. And there was a massive queue outside the restaurant. Everyone was eating there because they were like, holy fuck, we got to the next round of the World Cup thanks to this random Singaporean dude who happens to also own a restaurant. It was a pretty, pretty incredible story. Sorry that me with my headache and my cold, I really messed up telling that. So I apologize. But yeah, there was also another
one of your famous tangents. So well done.
That's all right. All you basically have to get down to the root of what my half-baked brain just said is that there was a lot of shenanigans to get China here in the first place.
Yeah.
And they didn't score a goal at the Asian Cup. And when the Socceroos last played them in the last cycle, along with Saudi and Japan, of course, we had the 0-0 at Sharjah, because that's what happens when you get China's current mode of football with their football curriculum up against the Graham Arnold 11 is a really batshit draw where, correct me if I'm wrong, Wu Lei capitalized from a mistake and we scored from a penalty kick. So like that is the caliber of football that we're going to continue to be talking about with China. The 7-0 loss to Japan, which we'll mention when we kind of touch on Japan.
Yeah.
But that is really, that's what we're talking about here. Mm. And ultimately, I think it emphasizes the ability for a Tony Popovich team to really want to go out on the attack and make the most of playing against a team of this caliber. Because even to the likes of Bahrain actually are a really well-structured team. You know, they beat South Korea at the Asian Cup, kind of caliber of team that we know that they can be. With China, it's worse. So I think that
you don't think China really have the ability in them to pull off like what the Bahrainians did on the Gold Coast, for example?
No, well, I mean, you never say never, right? But yeah. At the same time, basically, I mean, yeah, we're talking that doomsday scenario coming to fruition if China somehow win this game. I mean, it is. Yeah, it's beyond comprehension. They struggle more to threaten than Graham Arnold's 11 did, and that's just the plain and simple facts of the matter.
Yeah, okay. So a very ringing endorsement of China and their football, essentially, from Matt. No, but in all seriousness, I mean, even at a surface level, you just don't feel like they're going to have much to them, and this is just like it's... It just should be a layup, right? Like it should be. And that's, you know, you don't want to get too much into the hypotheticals and what should happen and just focus on what's, you know, at hand, but it really should be 3 points. Japan.
I just say though, sorry, I guess the worry is that they are going to be really solid defensively, right? So when we talk about being pragmatic, when we talk about like getting on the front foot, you really are going to have to get on the front foot because they are going to shut up shop. Mm. They've played a lot of 0-0 results and that's completely by design. So
yeah. Yeah, interesting. Japan, meanwhile, I mean, needs no introduction what a beast of a team these guys are. But, I mean, for me, I was actually looking today, was it today? No, it was yesterday, at their 2022 qualifying campaign. And there was actually a lot of tight games, a lot of tight wins. Wasn't the most convincing. And I think this squad now that they've got is a lot better than probably what they had. Like, it's improved more. But... I mean, just like the embarrassment of riches in attacking areas is just insane with this Japanese team. I mean, I watched Mitoma the other week because I'm a Chelsea fan. I watched Chelsea against Brighton. And that guy is a fucking unbelievable player. Like, and particularly when we're talking at an AFC level. I mean, he is a guy who could probably play meaningful minutes for any top club in the world. Like, I'm actually like, I think he's that good. And then you've got a guy like Takumi Minamino, who's playing in the Champions League with Monaco at the moment. Takefusa Kubo, who was at Real Madrid for a little bit. Now he's at Sociedad. Ritsu Doan is a handy player too. I mean, they've got so many attacking technical players. You know, needs no introduction. I mean, we're looking at, they played Bahrain and China in their first two games. Okay, you know, two maybe on paper, two of the weaker teams in the group. But it was kind of just a snapshot of what they, the way that they were able to just get on the front foot, like we've been talking about, but in such a dominant fashion in comparison to what we see from the Socceroos in this game. It's just chalk and cheese. I mean, they had, they've averaged, you know, they've had 77 and 78% of the ball in those two games, and they've only conceded one shot on target in the first two games. Now, again, as expected, I don't think it's a surprise that Japan dominated their first two games, but I think it's more the level of domination. I mean, they've scored 12 goals and haven't conceded in two games. Like, this, at the end of the day, Japan are obviously going to make the World Cup. They're the best team in Asia, in my opinion. But, like, still, the level of dominance and the fact that they basically look like they're just going to make, you know, very, very light work of third round qualifying should not be understated. I mean, Matt, the quality of this team is unbelievable. And I think, although we feel, you know, although we feel like, hey, Socceroos can put in defensive shifts, why not? Why can't they get a draw? Like, is the quality gap too far? Maybe that it might not matter. That's kind of what I'm a little bit worried about, I guess.
Looking at the fallout of as far back as kind of 2018 coming into the World Cup where they made the round of 16 and played Belgium, on following that into 2022 where things were a bit stagnant and things were a bit of a mess. One thing I never understood at the time was why Hajime Moriatsu gathered so much hate, because for me, he still had a very well-structured team. Only now are we starting to realize why people disliked his leadership so much, because this is what they were hiding the whole time, and only now has he brought it out to its fullest potential. I mean, there was something you just said there about like the level of dominance that they've caused, and I think Moriatsu has been given that much trust by the Japanese FA that he finally, after all this time, has reached that level. And to talk about Moriatsu and his resume, you may recall that famous game in Saitama that I just referenced where Rustic scored the goal. If we won that game, Moriatsu would get sacked.
He was going to get sacked. Yeah, I do remember that. Yeah.
And it's just so funny to look back on and contrast how both as Japan and Australia have had these wild stories play out in the last 2 to 3 World Cup cycles, including 18 into 22, now into 26, where we've both actually still had an immense amount of success by complete kind of contrast. And I just think that Japan and Australia, for the rivalry that it is and for the lack of a rivalry that's starting to come due to Japan's dominance, I think you can always guarantee on a Japan and Australia game to be interesting. Even when we hit our lowest of lows at Sydney Olympic Park, where, you know, Graham Arnold was playing Bruno and we lost 2-0, and that was a diabolical display from the Socceroos, I think there was still a massive element of intrigue to that add to the rivalry in the fact that that was a Socceroos team that went on and had all the success that they had. It almost just goes to show that what foreigners say about the Australian mentality and our resilience is just so true. And if there's one group of people that get that to their core, it's Japan. And Japan do have a lot of mutual respect for us, in the same way that South Americans have developed a big mutual respect for it, because they just got to see where the grind comes from. They see the grind and the mindset and the physicality and the jealous of it. Do you know what I mean? And I think that they're actually, for as dominant as Japan have been, they love these games and they do step up for these games and they still see the rivalry for what it is, you know? And that's where I always get a shiver down my spine when these games happen. And I think the rivalry very much is still alive, because someone like Moriatsu, he knows Australian football inside and out. He's been there and played us and been challenged by us in a very unique way for so long now. And yes, he's had our successes against us, but now he's, you know, with Popovich and whatever Popovich might cook up in this fourth fixture of the cycle, it is going to be a new interesting challenge for him, where he'll be asking questions and he'll want to know what's going on and what strengths are they going to play with. And, you know, will the likes of Aaron Kunda play a factor? We know that he's been stepping up in the Australian football cycle for so long. And it's actually fascinating to think about the Japanese angle on this game, because it is really, really intriguing to think about. Beyond that, though, again, I don't really know what else I can add to what you've said. They are a fucking phenomenal team with a fucking phenomenal manager.
But so, like, I don't know, you know, I don't want to be too harsh on the Socceroos, but I just think it's like I feel like maybe in the 2022 cycle, maybe not even then, like maybe a little earlier, like it was a bit more like, hey, like, you know, the Socceroos can get on the front foot a little bit maybe against Japan, and it's a bit more kind of an even back and forth game it could be. Like, I feel like now it's kind of like you're going there and you're playing for a draw. Like, that's, you know what I mean? I just feel like it's actually just become a lot more, what's the word? It's pessimistic. Regressed. Pessimistic.
Well, yeah. It's regressed, but I think it's not regressed because of the nature of a gap in quality generally, as much as it is a gap in quality that's come very specifically as a result of this current Japanese generation.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. So maybe so, they're kind of going through their own sort of golden generation a little bit at the moment. Possibly, I mean, or is that, I don't know, like, I don't want to disrespect Japanese football here. Yeah.
The Japanese football has been so well structured and been on such a meteoric rise that it is hard to say what is and isn't a golden generation.
Yeah.
I think if we looked back even at the 06 team, I think we'd be surprised at just how much talent they had sitting around, like Honda and Shinji Ono and these guys, right? You know, Honda even stood up at their worst ebb, which was, you know, 2014, which again, 2014 just stood out as a huge outlier for the whole confederation. I think that the strongest team at the 2014 World Cup was probably Iran, and it was just because Carlos Queiroz was a fucking master at defending against quality South American opponents. Sorry for the weird side tangent there again, but what I'm getting at is, Japan really do have something special now and something that they're able to harness. But I think, again, if you think they're going to come into this being like overconfident, and that's where we're going to...
No, I don't think that at all. In fact, no, I'm actually worried
I'm just saying like generally, if people are going to come into this thinking we might even be able to pick them out because they're overconfident. If you know anything about Japanese discipline culturally,
exactly.
If you know anything about Moriatsu as a coach, if you know anything about the likes of Doan and Minamino as players, they don't take shit. They really don't, and they will.
But that's kind of my feeling, where it's like Japan are going to feel like, well, let's say I don't know, soccer is like draw against China. It's like, oh my god, like we're basically on our knees here. Like, I feel like Japan are, like, can like just strike like another blow essentially if we're like on our knees going into that game a little bit, and it could get ugly if things don't start well. That's kind of what I'm worried about, I guess, in that game, and I don't think I'd be that surprised.
I am saying this purely to manifest it, okay? Let's say 1 point against China, and the narrative is drummed up so strongly that we come out and beat Japan away.
That would be
points from the window.
That would be ridiculous.
Just putting it out there, just saying it, because if I didn't say it, and then it happened, I'd feel horrible for thinking about it and not at least saying it out loud. So this is a moment of manifestation that may age like a fine wine, may make me look like a dickhead, but I just want to put it out there.
Okay. Last thing I want to mention before we do the predictions is, like, how many players have they got where you just look at them and be like, man, if we just had one of those guys or two of those guys that we just can plug into our... Like, I'm looking at, like, even someone like Daizen Maeda for Celtic, who comes off the bench for Japan, by the way. Like, that's a direct pressing, like, dog up front. That's just like...
I'm actually just going back to what I said earlier.
Yeah.
Josh Nisbet just low-key is an East Asian player.
No, but I mean more like... but I mean more like someone who's like just a proven goal scorer. Like, you could take any of those guys, like, even if you just like, hey, put Matoma on the Socceroos for one game, just so we can have one bit of like real elite quality, like just a real sort of like,
I know.
Every time this guy gets the ball, it's like everyone stops and watches,
this,
you know?
This kind of touches on the whole, or what if there was an Anzac 11 so we could have Winston Reid at the back and Chris Wood as the starting nine, you know what I mean? That's the kind of conversation you're struggling
with. I'm not like talking about like a fucking combined Japan Australia 11.
No,
who knows? I mean, you know, maybe a certain Nestor Iringunda could be that crown jewel come the next cycle, or maybe even now. Who knows?
Moriatsu is the kind of sicko that would pick out Iringunda and leave him flat on his ass. That's all I'll say.
In terms of
in terms of like he is just going to be that prepared for us to want to make Kieran Kunda kind of the emphasis in that game, which is again why I come to the likes of a Hrustic to be someone to stand up and change the game.
Yeah, right.
You know, someone like a Suter to be that solid presence at the back that's going to be overly physical and a really big solid presence that just Japan don't have a lot to answer for. Again, you probably have to start. I can't believe it's taken us that long to kind of say it, especially when we were talking about the lineup. But surely, knowing his track record in Japan, you start Mitch Duke as the nine for the.
Yeah, oh, no, I mentioned I'd be surprised if Mitch Duke didn't start as a nine.
Yeah.
All right, let's actually get into the predictions then. So we're going to do exact score predictions and goal scorers. Yeah, I'm really going to put you on the spot with that. So, excuse me. Socceroos China, let's start with you. Exact score?
Do
you want me to go?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'll go first. Okay. I'll go 2-0 to Australia. And I did say before in the we will definitely see that there will be a South Australian goal contribution. So Craig Gilman will score one and Mitch Duke will score the other. Why not? We mentioned Duke just then. I'll go Goodwin and Duke. The goal scorer is 2-0 against China. What about you?
So I'm looking at some shithousery. Here you go. From Tanjing, Hang Peng Fai from a corner puts China 1-0 up. Everyone is shitting themselves. Everyone's going absolutely bananas. You ready? You know what's a coming? You know what's a coming?
Here we go.
Apostolos de Marugopoulos. Apostolos.
I can't believe this has happened twice in one podcast.
1-1 Australia. Let's fucking go. And then before you know it, parity is restored and we clinch a 2-1 win. Everyone's still fuming in the comments going, oh my God, Tony Popovich, we can't even beat China easy. This is so fucked. And then we show up to Japan with some character. And we take a
point. Wait, who scores the second goal for 2-1?
Oh.
He's just dumb.
Fucking...
You were so focused on the...
Well. SA double. SA great.
Stamatopoulos double. Wow.
No. Sorry. I said SA great double Riley McGree. Sorry, I think there was
a McGree
cut out. In
Monica. Yeah. Okay. So you're saying 2-1, Socceroos against China.
Yeah.
Apostolos Stamatopoulos with the first goal. And then... Riley McGree with the winner. 2-1.
Yep.
Okay. Interesting. And then in Saitama, you start this one.
Yeah, so again, I think we show up with a lot of character. I think we take a point off them. To make 4 points in the window.
All right.
I don't think people realize how likely it'll be, especially if we do show up on the back foot and if we either get an early goal or kind of set them back to the point where they haven't scored by the end of the first half kind of scenario, and it starts to get real cagey, that can very, very easily happen. I mean, look at last time we played Japan, away. I think we were in that contest for the full 90 minutes, and it just so kind of happened to be that there was a bit of a mistake from Matt Ryan, if I recall correctly. Bayich as well. Bayich had the miss hit, and it just kind of found its way into the back of the net. It was a really unfortunate situation. So I can't see any reason why it doesn't really turn out to be the same. At the end of the day, they do have a lot of weapons. They are a very dangerous team, but we have the ingredients to be able to counter that. We really do.
Okay. So 1-1?
I don't know if it's just safer to go with the 0-0, because at the end of the day, if there is the goal, how does the goal happen from an Australian perspective? You know what I mean? And I can't really
wrap my head around it. Sorry.
Apo scoring in both games. Imagine.
Stop.
But, what?
I thought you were going to break out into it again.
No. You're just ridiculous. Also, can I just say that I've just pulled up the fucking Chinese team. Hang Peng Fai, who I said would score a header, he doesn't even have a cap yet. So the likelihood of there being two South Australian goal scorers and the goal scorer for China being an uncapped.
What's the odds on Sportsbet for that? I'm now intrigued. Anyway, no.
It's a bit of shithousery, but look, I just think that... the China win, something tells me that the China win will be convincing enough, but it'll still be really messy and people will be pissed off. I just get that feeling.
Yeah, I think I think at this point, we should just assume the anger. Like, it's like,
exactly.
Regardless of what happens on the pitch, we should just assume anger in comments. And then, all right, so you said a nil all in Japan. And I am going to, yes, I am the type of guy who picks against his own team because I'm just too truthful. I just can't. I'm just too realistic. I'm sorry. So, no, I think Australia will be solid for about 60 minutes, maybe 70. I think that they'll be resilient, and I think it might just be too much of a hurdle in, like, you know, for a team which is still kind of finding its feet under a new coach. So I think they'll probably lose 2-0 and a couple of late goals from Japan. That's my prediction.
Yeah, I think that scenario where it's 0-0 at halftime, I think that is probably more likely
the scenario that we
see play out. Yeah. I can't see Japan kind of getting on the board early. And if they do, it's more likely to pan out to be like a really messy result, at which point you'd hope we've at least smacked China 3 or 4-0, because if the inverse ends up happening, I mean, again, goal difference won't really matter in the spectrum of the top four, but in terms of our hopes of getting back into the top two and top the automatic two. Spot, you just hope goal difference doesn't take too big of a hit. I am confident enough to say that just with some of the dynamics at play here, a draw can be captured, but that's...
Okay. All right. So you are going 2-1 against China, Stamatolopoulos and McGree the goals, 0-0 against Japan. I'm going 2-0 against China, Goodwin and Duke with the goals, and 2-0 loss in Japan, because I am the type of prick that... tips against his own team just because I want to get predictions right. So I'm that type of bloke. We are going to wrap up the pod. Matthew, any parting words?
No.
No, not at all. Don't do it. You've already done it twice in this pod, please. I think the people have gotten the point around Apostolos, Stamatolopoulos. So
they have, but I just wanted to bring in some a fashionable closing.
But you realize it's a podcast; people can't actually see your clothing.
100%, but you're still going to find it funny.
Yeah, I do. For the listeners, Matt is wearing a snapback baseball hat or something, and then he's got these blue sunglasses, which he loves to wear. So.
Yeah.
Okay then. Interesting. Are they samurai blue?
If they are, I'm chucking them out. Oh yeah.
The hate watching has already started.
Let's not forget, no Chinese food, no Japanese food between now and next Wednesday when the window closes.
Yeah, I can't agree to that because I just had some tuna sushi rolls in the podcast.
You're the reason we lost.
It looks like I'll get my prediction right then and we'll lose 2-0.
Oh yeah, because predictions are more important than getting an automatic spot to the World Cup, you dickhead.
Okay, we're going to wrap up before Matt says something else he's going to regret. Anyway, okay. That's been another episode of the Front Page Football Podcast. Always good fun with my man from WA, Matt Olson. You're gonna start beatboxing the Apostolos. We really need to wrap up the podcast before he starts doing this again. He just can't help himself. But in all seriousness, make sure you're watching the Socceroos games. It is a 8 o'clock Eastern on Thursday night. And then it'll be, I believe, 10 o'clock Eastern on Tuesday night in Japan. So not, you know, I guess, come on, you can watch the game from 10, go to bed at midnight, be up at work at 7. That's all right. That's 7 hours sleep. So, you know, do your part and catch both games. Good luck, of course, to the Socceroos. We are all hoping that they can do well and get definitely at least 3 points against China is, I think, what everyone is at the absolute minimum hoping for. So it all starts Thursday. That's all from us from another week of the Front Page Football Podcast. Next week's pod, it's going to be a big one. It's going to be an A-League men's season preview, and make sure you are tuned in for it because it's going to be very detailed, and we're going to be giving our predictions, thoughts, everything heading into the A-League men's season. I've been your host, Christian Marchetti. He's been Matt Olson. Until next week, it's bye for now.